Green Day closed the show, and they had their opening act open the show 6 hours before they came out. This great group called Pansy Division.
Okay.
If you're looking for gay punk rock, you can do no better than Pansy Division.
Which it's all in the title.
Yeah, no, they played at the time their new hit single, Homo Christmas, which was
perfect.
Really lovely.
I like it.
But anyway, sorry, you were saying.
No, I don't know. Wasn't
you
important.
Were, yeah.
I wasn't important.
All right.
Okay, I know. I really it wasn't important.
Yes. Well,
but
no,
I was just going to say that I did love her in People vs. Larry Flint.
Sure. I haven't seen that in a while.
I love that movie.
I wonder if that holds up.
I wonder if it holds up too. Probably not, but it was great at the time.
Yeah. Milos Forman, I just...
Yeah.
Fan of his stuff.
I'm a Woody fan, though.
We both are, but different Woodies.
I'm a fan of those. I'm a fan of both. Yeah. I'm a fan of the Forbidden Woody.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife told me today, she's like, maybe tomorrow we clean up the basement a little bit and make it a little nicer looking down there. And she said that the Woody Allen poster's got to go.
And
it's this great one. It's this great French poster for Hollywood Ending where he is, it's like a cartoon version of him. It's like something out of Chaplin.
Yes.
And
do you have to like get rid of it, or can you just like curl it up?
I think it's
that someday. Yeah,
it's got to come down. I think I can keep it in the frame.
Okay.
I just think I have to put the frame
in the basement for a bit. Yeah,
in the unfinished part of the basement.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, that's a fair trade.
This is Why, with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling.
You know, I've been on all these conference calls in addition to going in, and everyone's really just hit the fuck it button, right? Like, nobody even brushes their hair, and like, I'm talking to some pretty, like, you know, some client, real business clients, big.
You want to drop some names?
No. But I'm just saying, like, it just wouldn't fly, right, in any other time. And I get that we're all in this, and we all should be able to do what we're comfortable with. So I'm not judging other people. However, I realized, I was like, you know, this is not what I want people to remember me looking like, all, like, disheveled and...
Right.
So I decided if I have a call or a podcast interview, plus now that we're big time with our network, I feel like we're going to have lots of clips of us like we used to do for our YouTube channel. So I want to be presentable. So if we have, you know, interviews, or if I have a real conference call, I'm going to make it a priority on those days to do my hair and makeup and look like a human. That's not to say there are days that don't, but.
Right. No, my problem is that it's all hair related. I was getting in need of a cut before the shutdown, and now it's starting to do a bit of a poly walnuts on the side.
Well, you know,
it's a look.
It's good.
Yeah, it's usually I get the Bob's Big Boy, like a porch coming right up.
Ooh,
off the
see,
front
that would
here.
Be awesome.
Yeah,
then you can take the back.
If I walk around like that, my hand up, then everyone gets confused.
See, why is it Bob's Big Boy versus Elias Brothers? We have Elias Brothers.
And
wasn't Big Boy started here?
I'm not sure. I knew he was a Midwest phenomenon. We don't have Robert. We're only just getting Steak and Shakes. So we're behind the times.
Well, good luck with those.
What does that face mean?
Just enjoy
it. Last time I was in Detroit, two times ago, I went to a Steak and Shake because I was like, I need to try one of these.
No, they are delicious, but it's kind of like their prices are going down and down and down, which on the one hand, that's lovely. But there comes a point, like, where is the threshold?
That's steak threshold.
Where you can, for $4, get a burger, fries, a giant shake, and like coleslaw. I mean, that's
well, that's it. it's similar to me with McDonald's. I don't know if they have it there. In New England, they in the summer, they would always offer the lobster roll.
Yeah, see.
And again, it's like, where do you want to... It goes back to my theory with restaurants. Just don't get too creative. You know, it's not like you can't go to McDonald's and say, man, the lobster roll wasn't that great. Well, no, it's McDonald's. Get them to do what they're good at.
Right. Filet of fish. That's your seafood option.
Right. You don't go to the French Laundry and go, yeah, the burger wasn't great. Well, no, that's not what they do there.
Right. Right.
So just keep it in their wheelhouse and you'll be fine.
How'd you get into this hobby? What was your first lock?
So I've been doing this, believe it or not, for 42 years. I know I look like I'm not even 42. It's okay. But anyway, I've been doing it since I'm 18. And I've always been a collector, and I started the usual route of young men or boys, baseball cards, stamps. And I realized that I could turn my hobby into a profession when I was a freshman at Fordham University. And I named my company, it's the same name, this 42 years, I named it University, because I wanted people to think, here's this young man who's working his way through college. What a great thing. Little did they know that I was completely seduced and working my way out of school and never finished school. The autographs have been fascinating. I've always been a collector too. I feel you cannot be a dealer, a successful dealer, unless you're a collector, because you just don't understand the mentality. And I wanted to collect something that wouldn't be a conflict with buying and selling autographs. And a friend of mine, a very famous collector dealer named Robert White, had this collection, believe it or not, in his mother's basement. That's where he kept it. And he sold it to me so that he could finance the purchase of the Evelyn Lincoln papers. You probably don't know what the Evelyn Lincoln papers are, but I'm going to tell you. They were Evelyn Lincoln was Kennedy's secretary, and she kept everything.
Wow.
And he built this incredible Kennedy collection, mostly through Evelyn Lincoln, and he needed the money to finance it. I had told him, hey, that hair collection is really cool. If you ever decide to sell it, this is like, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s. I said, if you ever decide to sell, let me know. And he did let me know, and I bought it. And I've been building it ever since. That's how I got into it.
How do you go about obtaining hair and authenticating it? Like, how is that possible to authenticate it?
Well, in my profession, every relic, just by its nature, requires somewhat of a leap of faith in order to understand whether it's authentic or not. Now, in my case, you know, that leap of faith can be a crack in the sidewalk, or it can be the Grand Canyon. And I only buy things that I consider to be, and it's all provenance. So provenance, and I tell people, no, provenance is not a place in Rhode Island. And the provenance of a particular relic is what determines whether it's viable as an authentic relic. And that's really kind of my job, is assessing that.
When did you know that you could turn these hobbies and passions into a career for your whole life?
I think the epiphanous moment was I was a freshman at Fordham. I won't say that I didn't party hard. there was a distraction. Remember, this is 1978, past the Vietnam era.
Sure.
You know, and I remember I got into an argument with somebody on my dorm room floor who was the quarterback of the football team. And I was working on the weekend buying and selling. And I said to him, you know what? This is 1978. So you know what? I could quit tomorrow and make more than a lawyer that gets out of college. And he said to me, Reznikov, you're full of shit. And it was shortly after that I did.
Like, watch me.
And here I am.
Love it.
Yeah. So what was that first piece in the collection that you bought of the hair that sort of got you started down this particular path?
So the first nucleus of my collection was Mrs. Edwards Pierrepont's collection of maybe 30 locks of famous people of the time. She was Ulysses S. Grant's Attorney General's wife, and she had this collection. And in there was, Grant's here himself. It was John Adams, a few others. And there was about 60 different locks. I now have about 150. And that was the first real group. And I guess I started buying individual locks shortly after that. One of the first ones I bought was Lord Nelson that came from his daughter. And I bought it at an auction in London.
I was going to ask how you procure these. Are any of these going out on your own and saying, hey, because I know you've got some interesting folks. Not a ton from recent years, but there's a few who are, it's a little more current.
Yeah. Well, I've stayed away from living people, people send me, because I don't want to, I don't want people to think, oh, John Rezikoff's running around with a pair of scissors.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Sweetie Todd.
So I've stayed away from anything that has like a kind of stalkerish connotation to it. And so most of the things that I have are hundreds of years old, and I really collect. The person has to have an influence on history. And at first, when I first started this, they had to have a positive influence on history. You want to hear how that changed?
Please, yes, because I know you have a few who are less positive.
There are. Yeah. So I'd say about 20 years ago, I was offered this fantastic hair lock of John Wilkes Booth. And the provenance with it is just magnificent. Here, the soldiers had tracked down John Wilkes Booth after he shot Lincoln. He's in a barn in Maryland, and he and Boston Corbett, the one who was tracking him down, lights the barn on fire. They smoke him out. They're shooting, and he ends up on the front porch, and he's got a bandage around his head, and there's a lock of hair sticking out of that bandage. And he was a hero to people in the South, and this was kind of the South. And the daughter of the farm owner said to the soldier, can I clip a lock of his hair? And they allowed him to, allowed her to. And that's the lock of my John Wilkes Booth hair. And so I was offered that about 20 years ago for $30,000. And I thought it was too much. And it was really sour grapes. So I said, you know what? I'm just not going to collect hair locks of people who had a negative impact on history. And about 3 years passed, and the widow of the man who collected this called me up and said, would you be interested in John Wilkes Booth lock of hair? And I said, how much? And she said, $17,000.
Oh. I said,
yes, I can do it.
So, I had Eva Braun not too long ago, and you could do, I don't know what show it was on, but somebody actually did a DNA analysis, and it turned out that she has some Jewish heritage. Hitler's common law wife, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
I guess all of this is, like you said, the provenance is a little more of a wing and a prayer. I mean, I'm assuming there's not a lot of John Wilkes Booth hair clippings going around. I know it was popular at a certain time to collect hair, but he was somebody who, as an actor, wasn't all that well known until he did a few things off the stage that,
Well, he was actually on the stage.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
That's okay. True. Yeah. Good point.
So unscripted. Well, he jumped from Lincoln's booth onto the stage. So
correct. Yeah.
So, you know, people who think my hobby is kind of weird, I quickly disarm them. And I'll ask you to. I bet you your mom somewhere in some album had a lock of your baby hair.
Oh, we have braids from my great-grandmother.
Right.
In a Whitman's candy box.
So this is a very Victorian tradition. So, you know, there is a lot of my hair that emanates in a more macabre way. After the person has died, that was how you remembered them. You took a lock of their hair and you put it in a locket. But, the Victorian tradition of collecting hair, it when somebody famous came to town, Robert E. Lee came to town, you didn't say, "Can I have your autograph?" He's not LeBron James. You didn't ask that. If you were fortunate enough to get in contact with him, you'd say, "May I please have a lock of your hair?" And it was mostly ladies who would ask, because their response would be, they would get a more positive response. So that's how a lot of the locks of hair in my collection start. And then there are some that are a little more macabre, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
What stands out as, I mean, you've already told us two incredible stories, but what stands out as the one that it's just the greatest story, you're never going to part with it, no matter how much anybody offers you?
You know, when people have asked me, and recently I've been asked by some really huge companies that are interested in DNA and have ideas to do with the DNA of famous people. And so I put the price of the collection so high that nobody will buy it, because I kind of love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, after this virus thing, I might need the money, but right now I don't, so I'm not going to sell it. But the stories that come to mind, there's two of them. I'll give you both of them if you'll,
yes,
if you have the time. Please. So one of them was, a guy down south said, "Hey, listen, I was at a tag sale and I bought something that says it's Jimi Hendrix hair."
Oh my God.
So I said, yeah. Let me, you know, Jimi Hendrix hair, come on. So he sent me this display that had these two charms. They look like voodoo charms, for lack of a better term, in them. And it had a plaque that said Jimi Hendrix hair from Felix Pappardelli. And I may be saying that name wrong. And I didn't think much of it. I put it aside. I ended up buying it. He had a price on it. I ended up buying it. I put it aside for further research to see if I was going to include it in my collection. And then I started looking, and it was on like the fifth page of a Google search. And I saw something that said Jimi Hendrix hair charm. And I opened it up, and it turned out that Guitar Magazine in 1993 had a seance where they used some artifacts of Jimi Hendrix and they interviewed him.
Wow.
This was like the 20 or 30 year anniversary of Guitar Magazine.
Love it.
And it was on Good Morning America.
Jimmy
was? From beyond.
So I call, you know, Guitar Magazine is not a small magazine. It's a big magazine.
Yeah.
So I called the editor and I asked him if he knew anything about this. And I never expected a call back. You know, who am I? They must think this guy's crazy. Next day I get a call from the editor of Guitar Magazine. And he says, "Yeah, well, we did have Jimi Hendrix hair, and it came from Fred Pappardelli."
There you go.
Those two shared an agent. He was a guitarist, I think, mm-hmm. if you Google them, maybe in a band called Mountain or something like that. And he said, "And by the way, it's in a magazine," and he sent me the magazine, and there's my hair locks photoed in the magazine. And wow. I eventually got the Good Morning America clip, which is, you know, looks horrible. But that's so, my favorite stories of how it came together.
That's awesome.
In a really good way.
Yeah. Yes, I love it.
And let's see. So the second one, that was one. The second one was one of my favorite locks, and one that's been displayed at many different places and museums, is my Edgar Allan Poe lock.
Oh, wow. That's a good one too.
So my Edgar Allan Poe, I mean, you know, they're pretty diverse individuals.
That's
Edgar
awesome. Allan Poe
and Hendrix.
But I love them both. So.
So, you know, so the Edgar Allan Poe lock came in a gold locket. I bought this lock and it had a bunch of initials on it. I didn't know what it was. And it said it was the hair of Edgar Allan Poe and Virginia Poe. Virginia Poe, of course, was his teenage bride, who was also his cousin.
Right.
And a very big Poe collector here. She's very famous and has the greatest collection of Poe. She did some research on it and actually found what the initials meant. And one of the initials, it was presented by Poe's mother-in-law and aunt. Oh. She's both.
Okay. Because, yeah, right. Yep. That's the cousin. Yeah.
And she found an auction catalog from the turn of the century where this was originally sold, this lock of hair. And that's just one of the greatest locks. I mean, I'd have to put the most valuable locks in my collection are the Edgar Allan Poe and Lincoln. I have the Lincoln. I have the lock that cleared the wound the night of the assassination.
Wow.
From the doctor.
Jeez.
Right. Wow. That's.
Do you keep Lincoln and John Wilkes Booth separated? Out of.
I have respect. I have hair respect.
Good. Good. I would expect nothing less.
They're also separated by the fact that it's alphabetical. So.
Oh, perfect. Good. That works well.
How do you store this stuff? I know you said the Hendrix one was framed. Are they all framed? The Poe one was
not. No.
How do you preserve it?
Everything's, well, most of them are in a temperature controlled vault room.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, they're either loose and in files alphabetically or stacked up in frames.
Okay. Do you ever just go and sit there and kind of feel the history around you?
Seriously.
I mean, where else?
The image I get with that is like, you know, somebody's just robbed a bank and they throw all the money in the bed and they roll around the money or something like that.
Right?
The answer is no, I don't do that. You don't.
Is there anything out there that is the one that you still want that you haven't been able to obtain?
What's your white whale?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it would be Shakespeare.
That would be amazing. You know,
his autograph is, there's only a couple known, and there were, I think they're in the British Museum, both of them. And if there were such a thing as a lock of hair, I would want that. You know, speaking of bad people, you know, I'd love to have a lock of like Al Capone's hair.
You have Dillinger, correct?
I do have Dillinger. That came from his death mask.
Wow.
Actually. I love any of the presidents I don't have. And I have quite a few of them. So
yeah.
Who's the most recent president you have?
So let's see. I'm trying to think if I have anything after Reagan. I do have Reagan from his barber. I do not have anything after Reagan.
Okay.
I don't think.
Is it getting easier or harder to collect this?
No, I mean, I think people are, you know, I had this mix up with, I don't know if you read about the thing that I had with Neil Armstrong.
I know he was not pleased with your.
Not pleased at all.
Yeah.
So, and that's what, you know, keeps me away from living people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did, now he's dead, but I did end up with his hair from his barber and he just went ballistic. And so I think people are careful if they're celebrities about that type of thing now.
Did you get it directly from his barber, or was there an intermediary?
There was an intermediary, but I'm the one who put it into motion.
You were the face of it. Gotcha.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. And that caused a lot. I mean, he threatened to sue. I said, I donate the money to charity and match the funds that I paid for it. And, right. You know, he backed off after a while, but
it wasn't like you're trying to clone him.
No.
No.
No. Although, you know, you say clone, I mean, you know, part of me feels that's, you know, this Jurassic Park mentality,
mm-hmm.
you know, we keep making advances in DNA, and who's right. to say, maybe not my children, but my children's children, you know, maybe there's a dinner party with the most famous people in history or their clone. Who knows? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Do you feel protective of the, especially with, like you said, with all this, the DNA and examining, who was the one to see if they'd been poisoned and all this stuff where like people are using the hair of notable figures in history for testing. Do you feel sort of a possessive, like not my hair, not my Elvis hair? Somebody
yeah, else I am protective, and I had a bad experience. So I had, you might remember there was the front of, I think it was Vanity Fair. The front cover had an article, The Man Who Would Be Camelot. Mm-hmm. And it was somebody who claimed they were Kennedy's son. Mm-hmm. And that their mother had had an affair. And I have Kennedy's hair with drop-dead provenance from the barber. These two guys came to my office, and under false pretenses, they said, you know, we're doing work on the heritage of presidents. Like, did Washington have German heritage? And one of the guys was the DNA expert for 911, for the towers, for the bodies. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was completely legit. And as it turned out, they were testing my Kennedy hair to see if he had an illegitimate son. Now, you know, wow. I do business with Kennedy family members.
Right.
And it would have been too good if I were part of that, would
right.
it?
No.
So I am kind of protective about that. And I don't, you know, I also feel these DNA tests, you know, you never know how accurate they can or will be based on whether somebody touches the hair or sure. has been corrupted by another method. So right now I'm very careful about who I would give access to. Let's sure. put it that way.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes sense. I mean, even just the stories from the at-home DNA kits, people finding out relatives they didn't know they had. I mean, it's amazing, but it can go very south very fast. So
absolutely.
I completely understand why you would honor that.
So looking ahead, I mean, now that obviously this is something aside from your sort of you leave work at work, and this is something you do as a side project. What have you got coming up at either an auction or that you guys just got that you're excited about? Because I know you've got Obama's Jeep. You've got, I mean, it's an insane assortment of things.
I sold Obama's Jeep twice.
Oh, you did.
Wow.
And the funny thing it was a negotiation. And in that negotiation, the person who bought it insisted that that the car be, you know, fully functioning and working well. And what I did was I kept all the parts when I repaired it. So I still have the parts. I had Obama's car. I had Kennedy's car that he rode in the night before the assassination and the day of the assassination. I have Napoleon's chair that he sat in at the Battle of Waterloo. I have Lee Harvey Oswald's jacket. I just sold Greta Garbo's mink coat.
Wow. Wow.
Amazing.
So what's the most recent thing you got? That's
in hair or in anything?
Anything.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So we've been selling, Jack Kerouac's archive. Mm. Wow. So in two auctions ago, I had Kerouac's typewriter and Hemingway's typewriter.
Oh my gosh.
Really cool. Wow.
Very cool.
Did you type anything on either one of them?
I didn't.
For more information on John and his hair collection, to sell any sort of valuables that you might have, or to see what they have up for auction now, you can check out John's website. It is universityarchives.com.
Be sure to follow Why the Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our YouTube channel for some additional great Why content. If you're so inclined, please leave us a review and let us know how we're doing.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hedquist, our reluctant executive producers are John Sove and Sandy Stone. Our graphic designer is Samantha Mustonen. Our intern is Randy Jeanette. The theme song was performed by the Electrosynthno-Magnetic Polyphonic Orchestra. This one's for Philippe. Thanks for joining us. Flash, we're coming home.
Nigel, is that you? Are you here? Nigel?